Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, September 18th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, CDFW conducts marijuana enforcement operation near Garberville Airport Tuesday. Arcata Fire saves lives, homes in McKinleyville blaze. And county conversations with Humboldt's 3rd District Supervisor. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Just before news time, a vegetation fire was reported north of Redway near Dean Creek. However, all units have been canceled.
My name's Tim Teets. I'm the Garberville Fire Protection District Chief, and we just had a call for a smoke check on Highway 101 near Dean Creek. We had Garberville, Redway Fire, and multiple CAL FIRE units respond, as well as 3 aircraft, and we were unable to locate anything, so we are going to be clear and returning.
Despite the cooler weathers, Humboldt and Mendocino County are entering into their traditional fire seasons. For helpful tips on how to prepare your home and family, you can visit readyforwildfire.org. Just past 11 a.m. this Wednesday morning, multiple fire units were dispatched to a residential structure fire on the 600 block of Montana Road in McKinleyville. Responders included Arcata Fire, Blue Lake Fire, Samoa Fire, Humboldt Bay Fire, CAL FIRE, and the Sheriff's Office. Arcata Fire crews were the first to arrive on scene and found 2 homes fully involved. For more details on the response and impact, we spoke with Arcata Fire Chief Chris Emmons.
We had a report of a residential structure fire out on the 600 block of Montana Road. Our first units got on scene and found that a pickup that was fully involved had spread to one house, and a second house, neighboring house, was starting to catch on fire as well. Our first personnel on scene made contact. They were told that someone was still in the house, and they made contact with an occupant of the residence and got them out. They were able to come out on their own. However, they were unaware that the house was on fire, so they got them out. And then as we were getting on scene initially, the Sheriff's Office, Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, was there, and they went in and did a secondary search of the rest of the residence and made sure no other occupants or pets were inside and confirmed that, which by them doing that was tremendous help for us, because then the fire resources, the fire personnel, could focus solely on fighting the fire and containing it and making sure it was extinguished quickly.
Emergency responders confirmed that the fire originated from a vehicle and quickly spread to the 2 homes. The total damage to the homes and vehicle is estimated at $30,000. However, the cause of the fire remains under investigation.
What I can say is I know it came from the vehicle area. I couldn't rule out a number of things. I mean, it could be an electrical issue with the vehicle. It could be an intentional issue. I don't know, because I don't have enough to go off of to prove either way what it was or was not. I just know that basically on my interpretation of the patterns of the fire patterns on the vehicle, it appeared that it started in or around the front motor compartment area, and then because of the radiant heat, because it got so big, it spread to the one house and then eventually started to catch the second house on fire as well.
Chief Emmons also offered safety tips to help prevent future fires, especially with the changing of season.
Obviously, having ignition sources close to the house, if you have a vehicle parked in a driveway, in this case, the vehicle was close enough to the house that the radiant heat ignited the houses. We always recommend keeping combustibles away from a residence, wood piles, things like that, if at all possible. I don't want to say they were parked too close or anything like that. They were parked legally in their driveway, so I can't really say that that was the issue. But, obviously, if a vehicle is being worked on, you should probably have it worked on by a trained mechanic. If a vehicle's having issues, maybe it might even be as simple as, if it's an electrical issue, disconnecting a battery or something like that. I don't know that that's what the cause was in this case. As far as the residence itself, I mean, we always look at things like don't store hot ashes inside the residence or against the residence, and the reason I say that right now is we're starting to see some cooler week nights, and because of that, people are starting to use their fireplaces and things like that, so they might be, you know, taking ashes. Maybe they had their first fire of the fall, and they put ashes in a plastic bucket instead of a metal bucket, so things like that. I mean, we recently just put out some of our safety tips for, you know, cooler weather and things like that, so those are just some of the things off the top of my head, but they're not necessarily specific to this incident.
He urged residents to make sure their chimneys are properly maintained and that homes are prepared for the increased fire risk that comes with colder weather.
Servicing your furnaces and making sure your chimneys and stovepipes are inspected and cleaned if need be. And one thing I will add in is we're bringing back our Fire Prevention Day for the Arcata Fire District, which will have all kinds of tips, such as what we're talking about right now, that we can provide the public. And that'll be on October 5th from 10 to 2 at our McKinleyville Fire Station. So we'd love to see public come out and learn from us, because we certainly like doing public education.
If you have questions or concerns, you can contact the Arcata Fire District directly at 707-825-2000 or follow Arcata Fire on social media. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office assisted the California Fish and Wildlife's Marijuana Enforcement Division yesterday in Garberville, serving multiple warrants on properties near the Garberville Airport. At this time, CDFW has not released a statement on yesterday's operation. However, we did speak with
Lieutenant Moore of the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office.
Lieutenant Moore couldn't comment on Tuesday's marijuana bust because HCSO wasn't the lead agency. But he does oversee the county's marijuana enforcement team, so we checked in about this year's operations.
And so in southern Humboldt and all of Humboldt, we are still doing marijuana operations for illegal cannabis. If somebody doesn't have the correct state license and county license, then we will seek out search warrants and seek to contact those individuals and investigate the cultivation sites as we come across them.
And after years of leading the marijuana enforcement team, he says he has seen the difference legalization and county code enforcement have had on underground cultivators.
So we've seen it go from large-scale greenhouse outdoor marijuana operations, and then because of the satellite imagery the county has, that is now a lot of those have gone away because people know that the code enforcement can see them from their satellite imagery. So we're seeing a lot more indoor and large diesel generator grows that are under the tree cover and kind of really hidden. So we're seeing a lot more of that. And then we've also seen a lot of some fuel thefts from county yards to try to assist some of those grows because the price of fuel, as everybody knows, is so high.
KMA News confirmed with County Roads that fuel theft has occurred on county yards at Elk Creek, McKinleyville, and Hoopa.
And we just continue to get a lot of complaints from neighbors and landowners regarding sites next to them or subjects that are in the legal market and have jumped through all the hoops that they have to jump through and trying to do it the right way. They're calling and speaking with us regarding illegal sites, and then also marijuana burglaries and robberies are also, it seems like, uptick this time of year right now for some reason. And so we're trying to work with property owners and licensed facilities to try to mitigate that and help them in stopping some of that activity.
He stated that the calls of cannabis-related robberies are coming from licensed farms, although he believes that unlicensed farms are also getting hit, but are not reporting.
We just don't get that many calls reporting those. We do see quite a few on the license sites, and we've been speaking with those owners to try to get them ways that they can help reduce that. And if anybody ever does have any information regarding burglaries or marijuana ripoffs, they can definitely call the sheriff's office and speak with us and assist us in trying to catch the people responsible.
In years past, the sheriff's office has stated that it would turn a blind eye to unlicensed cannabis if the cultivator was calling to report a violent crime. So we asked if that's still the case.
The violent crime takes the precedence, so we're not, if somebody's been robbed or there's a home invasion or something along that line, we don't look towards the people for what their status is. We're more worried about getting the suspects and people associated with the violent crime and getting them stopped and getting them dealt with. I mean, when we're there, we'll probably speak with the person if they are illegal and just try to get them to go the right way, but we're not going to go after a victim, whether they're illegal or not, if they've been through an incident like that.
Rural Northern California counties have joined forces to create a human trafficking task force, forming a nonprofit that includes Humboldt, Mendocino, Trinity, Lake, and Butte counties. A 3-year grant is funding Humboldt County's involvement in the regional effort to combat human trafficking, particularly on cannabis farms. Here was Sheriff Hansel speaking at a recent Board of Supervisors meeting.
When we come in to do our search warrants on marijuana grows, we suspect that there's labor trafficking going on. Labor has become the biggest liability when it comes to growing marijuana now. When you used to grow it for $3,000 or sell it for $3,000 a pound, you could pay someone $200, $300, $400 a pound to trim it for you. And we've seen that over the years where we had the trimmigrants coming into town and getting a lot of money to trim for 3 to 4 months in a season and then go back to wherever they came from. And well, that's not happening anymore. When you have marijuana that's selling between $300 to $500 a pound, labor and trimming the marijuana has become a huge liability for the farmers. And so how do you combat that? You combat that by forcing labor, by having labor trucked in to your facilities, to your gardens. And oftentimes these are people that are non-documented, that are people from foreign nations that are coming in and that are working these farms. What we found is when we come and do search warrants at these locations, that these individuals don't want to talk with us. These people don't want to give statements. We believe that they're trafficked. We believe that they are victims of crime. But we didn't have the resources to actually help investigate that.
And Lieutenant Moore says he has been on the front lines in the attempt to end forced labor on unlicensed farms.
So, yeah, what we're seeing now and why we started this task force is over the years, we've seen a lot of people that have come to this country either willingly or unwillingly, unfortunately. And once they get here, they think that they're going to just have a job or work somewhere, and then they're forced to provide labor or services on farms and aren't paid or aren't fed. And some of the locations that I've personally seen are just horrendous on what these people have to live in. No running water, no bathrooms. I mean, not even an outhouse or a jug of water. And they're getting water out of a creek, which who knows if that water is suitable for drinking. They're just going to the bathroom anywhere in the woods. They're living in tarps and makeshift little structures. And then once they complete the task that they were hired for, they're either forced to go to another location or they're gotten rid of, which we've seen in the past. Quite a few years ago where there were some Guatemalans, instead of paying to just kill them and get rid of them. We all know if you've lived in Humboldt County for any time that that's not an exception. So the other thing is they have no way to reach out for help most of the time. There's so far out in the hills that they can't walk to safety. They don't have, their phones are taken from them. All their identification paperwork is taken from them. And so not being from here and just taken out in the hills, they have no hope because they don't know where to go or where they can seek any assistance. So we're trying to stop that and bring it to the forefront and really assist these people in getting help. And so, I mean, in the years past where when we would do operations and everybody would run because they feared the police. A lot of times now, because the word's getting out on what we're doing, they're not running, they're coming, they're talking to us, telling their stories, telling of other people that they know that are in bad situations. And trying to point us in the right direction to get them help.
Notably, Humboldt County is a sanctuary county within a sanctuary state, which protects undocumented immigrants from being deported or handed over to federal immigration authorities.
Yeah, so the county and the state that we live in, we do not, if we come across somebody that's here illegally or undocumented, however you want to put it, we don't reach out to Border Patrol or any federal agency. We don't arrest them based on that status. We try, if they are here and have been trafficked, we try to get them services and help and get them what they need to, one, go home if that's where they want to go, or to try to obtain a visa or get whatever services that them and their family need.
Now that the county has secured a $300,000 grant for their task force, more information will be forthcoming, and KMA News will continue to share updates. But in the meantime, we asked Lieutenant Moore what else the marijuana enforcement team will be targeting this year.
We'll be targeting people that do not have state or county permits, people that when we see locations or if we get contacted by public members regarding certain locations, if there's high potential for either trafficking victims or watershed degradation, those are what we're really looking for to help get our watersheds cleaned up. And anybody that's in need of assistance who's been put in a very unfortunate situation. We work hand in hand with Fish and Wildlife. They have their own marijuana enforcement team, watershed enforcement teams. So we work with them and assist them when they need assistance. And so they're out there doing the same thing. They're looking for illegal diversions, watersheds that are being overdrawn because of illegal cannabis. And so whenever they need assistance, we will go out and assist them. And when we need assistance, they do the same for us. Well, if anybody needs to talk to the sheriff's office or wants to report any information regarding robberies, or if they know somebody that's been trafficked, whether it's sexually or labor trafficked, forced to work for no pay or bad conditions, they can always reach out to the sheriff's office.
Crime tips can also be submitted anonymously at 707-268-2539. Tonight's County Conversations features our monthly check-in with Humboldt County's 3rd District Supervisor, Mike Wilson, who represents the cities and unincorporated areas of Arcata, Blue Lake, Freshwater, Neyland, and Manila. Thank you, Supervisor Wilson, for joining us on this third Wednesday of the month. Tonight is our inaugural check-in with the 3rd District, so I was hoping you could share a general overview and update on all of the things you've been focused on.
You know, the job itself, kind of in three major components, which is sort of working at the state level, I guess, because, you know, the county in essence is an arm of the state. So it's like tracking legislation that's occurring, advocating for funding sources, all those kinds of things. So sort of, you know, advocating outside, and this is in no particular order, you know. And then another part of the job is advocating for my constituency within the county and sort of advocating, you know, to operate and fund the county as an institution and a governance structure, as well as hoping and helping to keep civil society together and all the functions that it has institutionally and infrastructurally. And then there's just the customer service end of the job. So that's, you know, talking to the constituents directly about their issues, wherever they may be, helping them navigate our system of our internal bureaucracies, and also, you know, making sure and even external to help move things along. So within that, so many things are of issue these days. Our infrastructure issues are things where I'm really working on. Certainly, we can talk about for a minute, our mental health infrastructure is in great need of upgrades, and we're trying to work on that, as well as just future planning elements in terms of you know, what's coming down the pike in terms of our long-term and our long-range planning efforts at the county to implement the general plan. And then there's, you know, the broader and bigger projects. Certainly wind energy is one of those. How we're dealing with fire and the landscapes around that, amongst many other things. So that's kind of a broad brush.
During the last election cycle, you won another term in office. So I'm hoping you can share what the next 4 years will look like for the 3rd District.
Well, for the 3rd District specifically, I think, I mean, it's where it is in nexus with the rest of the county and the state. So one of the bigger projects that we're looking at to serve the county that would be in the 3rd District would be a triage center for a mental health triage center. I mean, one of the issues we're having at the county and in our local hospitals is a lot of folks who are having a crisis, a mental health crisis. Like the first place that they can really get to is our emergency rooms and in our local hospitals. That has really caused some functional issues in those institutions, in those spaces, and specifically, you know, providing those services. And it was especially acute under COVID when folks were unable to be released when they got there and those sorts of things. And so it really brought to bear that we need a facility where people can triage or we can, you know, have people have good service, not in our emergency rooms particularly, but in a place where, you know, maybe they don't necessarily go to Semper Virens, our sort of longer term a mental health facility, but really just need that. And so I think that's pretty important. But, you know, to tee off of that, external to the 3rd District, but really important to the entire county, is we are also seeking funds to rebuild the Semper Virens Center that we have, our mental health facility in Humboldt County, which we are extremely lucky to have. It's a 16-bed facility, and I guess it's not actually by luck, it's by work of people who many decades ago, you know, saw that there was a need for this and put that facility together. We don't really, in California, it's actually very rare. We're probably, I think, one of the most remote service providers in that space. It's actually pretty rare to have a rural facility have this type of service, but the building itself is at the end or probably on the end of its functional life. It's to a place where we really can't sustain it much longer, and so we're really in need of seeking those funds. But a new facility is probably around $45 million. There's no way we could do that with our own funds, and so we have to seek external funding to look at to try and do that, and we're making those requests as we speak. We just approved a funding application request process for that, and we would probably have to fund 10% of that, which would be about $4.5 million. That will be difficult for us to do, but it's really, really a necessary and vital facility. So I'm hoping that we're going to be able to do that.
We will definitely continue to update on that as our county conversations continue. I want to switch gears because I thought it was interesting that you attempted to change a vote to dissenting about 2 months or so ago in regards to On Patrol Live, the new reality television show featuring the sheriff's office. You expressed that you didn't have a lot of confidence in this project. So I'm wondering what your specific concerns are about the show and if supervisors will have any control if things go sour.
Right. Well, I'll give you the technical reason why I kind of at the last minute didn't want to vote for that. It's basically it was on consent, and there's a whole bunch of other things that were on consent. And so I thought there was a vote to dissent on that already. And so I wasn't going to, we need a 4/5 vote in order to move the consent forward, but I didn't read the room well. Had I done that, I would have voted no on that forfeit, and it would still would have passed with the 4-5. That being said, my concern with that really had to do with, I've never find that those shows really, that kind of media really projects the community from which they emanate in a good light. I hope that this one is different, I guess, but that's where my confidence really is very low, is I just never view those as having a positive benefit on the communities in which they exist. And so that was why I didn't think it was the value that was being projected.
And just clarifying, you know, understanding that the sheriff's office is its own independent elected position, yet this show still needed board approval. So is there any control moving forward once the show is being produced? If the community is having horrible experiences, will the supervisors have a say whether it continues?
Don't have an answer for you. I think that would be a question for the sheriff.
And with just about under a minute left on the clock, is there anything else you would like to leave your listeners and your constituents with?
Yeah, I there are a few things coming up that I think will be important to people in the near future. The coming through our planning department will be commercial and residential zoning updates. We're really looking to, and there's been direction from the board, both through the general plan, but even just more recently, to expand and diversify mixed use in our commercial zones. And so really allowing for more residential opportunities so that we can expand residential uses in our commercial zones. We'll see that coming soon. I think there's, you know, applications for that, as you may imagine, in even in our small towns in Southern Humboldt and Eastern Humboldt, as well as in other places. And so I'm hoping we'll be seeing that probably at the beginning of this next month. And then after that, we'll be looking at some lighting and noise ordinances that should be coming through. But the main effort at that level is our climate action plan, environmental impact report. And I'm hoping that people weigh in on that as well.
That concludes today's check-in. Thank you so much, Supervisor Wilson.
Thank you for allowing me this time on KMUD. Always appreciative of KMUD and everything that it does and all its value in the community.
Our next county conversation will feature Supervisor Arroyo on the fourth Monday of the month. If you have questions you would like asked, you can submit them to news@kmud.org. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thank you for donating in our fall membership drive. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.